Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 150 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is December 27th, 2010. It's our very last podcast of the 2010 calendar year, and it should be a pretty good one. I'm down here in Little Dixon, Tennessee, visiting my fiance's family for the holidays, so I don't have my normal recording equipment. Hopefully it sounds okay, but we're coming to you. We're going to try and get everybody on the podcast this week over Skype, and we have special guests first. We have Dan Weber from USCFootball.com. Dan, thanks for joining the podcast. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good, Ryan. A little bit better weather out here, I guess, than you guys are dealing with. You haven't had the blizzard, but it sounds pretty cold and wintry back there.
Yeah, we got a little snow. It's been there's snow on the ground. It's kind of nice, though, but it's cold. It's pretty chilly here. My family up in the Northeast, they're getting hit by a blizzard right now, but I left L.A. It was raining 7 days in a row, and come out here, we got some snow. So it's a little different, a little mixed up.
Oh, well, it's going to be better here and USC football, I think. We're looking, you know, the sky is clearing and all of that kind of thing. And it'll pretty soon it'll be spring football, and everything will be brighter down the road here.
I think I agree with you there. And we've been trying to kind of look into the future, I guess you could say, and we put a piece up on USCFootball.com called Scholarship Math, just kind of looking at the nine early enrollees that came in to the program that USC signed that can participate in spring ball, and where that puts the program scholarship-wise, what kind of numbers and stuff. And right now we have the count at 62 scholarship players with the guys that are coming back to the program. That also includes Michael Reardon, which he could still leave there, but his name is included in that list and the nine early enrollees. And then, of course, USC will get, 15, 20, whatever, 25 new guys in February as well. So it seems like this was a real push for the coaching staff to get this program back up to somewhere near that 85 scholarship limit heading into the sanctions, just so they're better equipped to kind of handle that hit in scholarship numbers.
They had to. They had no choice. I think that was absolute. And I don't even think the NCAA, as negative a viewpoint as some of us might have about the NCAA, even the NCAA couldn't have possibly said, we need, if you're below the numbers, the full numbers, then to ask you to also take the hits of the harshest, scholarship penalties in history, pretty much. I guess one other time there was one that was comparable. And to do so, without having any, USC had no knowledge that these kinds of penalties were coming. So they had, had the tradition under, Pete to not recruit full classes. I think there's also the issue that, is being, the outside the lines on ESPN raised the other night with the tradition in the Southeastern Conference of over-recruiting and running kids off. I think now the NCAA is probably pretty sensitive about that, that other abuse going the other direction where you recruit more kids than you've got spots for and you run kids off by not helping them out academically and what have you once you've decided you don't want them or don't need them. USC never did anything like that, never was any part of any of those kinds of abuses. So, it would certainly look like that there's an understanding that USC, until the case is heard, until the final appeal, process has all gone through and the response back, that USC is allowed to have, an absolutely full, roster of 85 scholarship players because, the penalties were worsened by the NCAA when they allowed the, kind of unprecedented kids could leave, juniors and seniors could leave at any time. I mean, that was the second, basically a scholarship reduction against USC. So, it certainly looks like it. No one has ever said that we're going to be able to get back up to 85 before we hear, from the NCAA. But it certainly looks like that's the plan.
Yeah, it seems like it, and there's been some debate. I even was talking with Gerard, who's really dialed into all the recruiting stuff, and they've never come out and said, well, you can basically, if you appeal the sanctions, all sanctions are stayed. But it seems like there's some sort of agreement there where USC said, hey, we'll take the bull ban now, and it didn't seem like the NCAA would have any problem with that. But it does also appear that the full scholarship reductions, the limit of 80 to 75, or 80, depending on what USC was accepting on their own, and then 5 or 10 losses of scholarships per year for 3 years. That whole piece seems to have been stayed. It really makes it a little bit easier for Lane Kiffin to kind of get the program where it needs to be to handle a hit like those number of scholarships that they have. If you look at this season, they were under 75 scholarships this year. So I don't know. I mean, I guess you could compare that to 2 or 3 years down the road. 2 or 3 years down the road, if they're down to 75 scholarships or so, it might look a little bit like this year did.
Right, and I guess what USC could be saying is, look, if you'd have penalized almost anybody else, certainly in certain conferences, if you'd have penalized anybody else, they would have been starting with 85 scholarships plus probably recruits that took them over that they were planning to whack somebody else to get down to 85. Unfortunately, at USC, we didn't do that. We didn't take advantage of kids. We didn't run kids off. We didn't over-recruit. And because of the way it ended up with the coaching transition from one staff to the other, we started out, under, in effect, penalty circumstances, penalty numbers. I mean, I guess you could make a case that, hey, we've already used the first year of scholarships last year. In effect, last year, USC was under the scholarship ban and probably could say, hey, we already were under 75 scholarships and we were under 15. We only recruited 15 or 14, whatever the number turns out to be now that I look back, looking backwards. USC actually served year one of the penalties last year. Under both sets of numbers, USC hit the NCAA's penalty limit with, they were under 75 scholarships total, and they didn't recruit more than 15, they didn't give out more than 15 scholarships until you count the early admissions for this year. So, in effect, last year was year one of USC being under a scholarship sanctions.
No, I agree with you, and it's an 8-5 record. I'm not sure what the record will be a few years from now, but this does put them in a place where they'll be able to handle this a little bit better. And of course, you're going to lose stuff with a coaching transition as well. So, like you put in that top 10 list, there were so many stories over this past year. If you haven't checked it out, check it out on uscfootball.com. Dan did a great top 10 stories of 2010 and storylines, and amazingly enough, something like a guy like Pete Carroll leaving a program that maybe the most successful run ever didn't even make the top spot. That's how much crazy stuff was going on with this USC program.
Yeah, I was telling I said I think it was 10 years worth of stories for a normal big time program, and it happened in about 10 months. I mean, our heads are still spinning. I mean, really, when you think of all the things that happened to this program and in about 10 months. It's just absolutely unbelievable. It even ended up by just throwing in the fact that still, USC, as much as we talk about football and basketball, USC still won 3 NCAA championships last year, which you point out to people and they think, well, yeah, so big deal. And you say, well, the other USC, the University of South Carolina, won a championship last year. It was their second in history. They won one track, individual track title. I said, people at USC, I don't think they understand how big a deal, what USC does kind of on a regular basis. You almost don't even think about it. And they were one shot away from winning a golf, you know, the national championship in golf. So, I mean, it's just, it's kind of unbelievable the tradition that's built up and the things that you kind of almost expect without even thinking twice about them. And you look at other places and you think, you know what, this is different. The expectations here, the things that are, you know, are done here on a regular basis are really unusual.
Yeah.
At a level that just doesn't exist anywhere else.
Well, I think a lot of times when you're talking about championships like that, you're going to compare yourselves, if you're USC, you compare yourself to UCLA or Stanford, who they also have over 100 overall NCAA titles like USC does. I mean, they're all, I think that's 1, 2, and 3. I forget who has the most, or USC had the most, and now they don't. It's something like that. But, I mean, you're comparing those to other schools that have 100 championships, which is just ridiculous, you know. And you're talking about South Carolina, you know, great tradition in athletics. They have 2 all-time. It's hard. But, you know, when you have programs in the Pac-10, because the Pac-10 has the most overall championships, that's who you're going to end up comparing it to.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, USC, I think the different math was some of the schools have more NCAA championships. USC, because it predated, I think, in terms of the quality of its athletic program, probably for a long while had more overall championships. And then, like, the football championships don't count as NCAA championships. If you've got 11, let's say, and somebody else has 1 or none, you know, you also then have those championships, even though they don't count to your NCAA championships. But the math is amazing when you think about it, and it's one of the reasons that probably there is a little more envy or jealousy or however you want to look at it from other schools that they don't exactly verbalize, but it's probably under the surface just a little bit. And as I always think about this, this is the image that will never leave my mind is at the very end of that championship baseball game where UCLA, unfortunately, because of all the injuries and a couple of you know, things that they did that they were kind of uncharacteristic, and they ended up losing to South Carolina this year. And the South Carolina kids winning their first ever team championship are out there on the field, and what are they screaming? SEC, SEC. And my head, it's like there's another one of those moments where your head explodes. Can you imagine a USC or a UCLA running out there and jumping on a pile and screaming Pac-10, Pac-10? It's just, it's such a different mindset. I mean, those kids from South Carolina would be chanting SEC, SEC. It's just, they think about things differently. I mean, USC and the Pac-10 people or the Pac-12 people are in a different place in terms of this back and forth between conferences. And it's a story that is playing out in the BCS in terms of gaming the system in favor of certain conferences. And it's probably moved into the area of where it's really serious, I think, is gaming the system has moved into the NCAA, and that's not what the NCAA should be about, where some conferences are able to game the NCAA and some are not, and U.S., especially not if it's going to be the USC's detriment. I mean, when you look at the Auburn case with Cam Newton, when you look at the Ohio State case and how they gamed the system in order to say you know, that those kids should be allowed to play in the bowl game because they hadn't been. I mean, I think one of the interesting stories here is a number of years ago when Ohio State got by on Maurice Claret, we were told by the NCAA that the reason they didn't come down hard on Ohio State and Maurice Claret in the national championship and the car that he ended up with and all the things that happened was Ohio State had a fully staffed compliance department, which I think was 7 people and a couple of other, you know, associates involved, and that Ohio State did everything you could possibly do in terms of compliance, and they tried. They just happened to miss the stuff involving Claret. Okay, that was the explanation then. Now the explanation we're getting is that Ohio State is saying that they didn't do the job with their big compliance department in telling these players they weren't allowed to sell their stuff. So now we're getting two different sides of the same story that both are used to justify not coming down so hard on Ohio State. One, they have a wonderful compliance department that does everything right, except catch guys breaking the rules. And the second one, they don't have such a good compliance department because they're not telling the players the real story about what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. Obviously, what that tells you is the NCAA can look at each case any way they choose. And they chose to nail USC, and they haven't chosen yet at this point in time to nail Ohio State or to nail Auburn or, you know, to nail, favored schools. That doesn't look good. And if the NCAA wants to act like we're going to get tougher or we're going to do this or whatever, they have to establish some confidence in the integrity of, you know, their decision-making process. And there is none of that right now whatsoever. I mean, how can Ohio State, you know, we hear about the same compliance department, two completely different stories from the NCAA as to how they're making decisions with regard to Ohio State.
Yeah, it doesn't, there's not a lot of consistency there, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. And we can feel the frustration of USC fans on the message boards each and every day, and we'll keep on top of all that story stuff. Well, let's get to a couple of questions.
Where that really is an important story is you can now read the UCLA message boards or the Ohio State message boards or anybody's message boards. And they all now, if you didn't know what message board you were reading, you might think you were still reading the USC message boards. Because the feeling out there now is that the NCAA, you know, can't be trusted and isn't to be trusted. And it's not, you know, for a long time, that was the USC position, but it wasn't necessarily anybody else's position. I think by now, it's kind of generally accepted by the media, finally, you know, has come around. And it's a change. If I were the NCAA, I would, you know, anybody involved with the NCAA, I would really be worried with their lack of credibility in this particular situation. They have really hurt themselves, I think. And USC case is maybe their first big step where they got themselves off, you know, so publicly off track, you know, just the way that developed. And it took them 4 years, and then when they did, you know, after 4 years, they came up with just a horrific, you know, final product as far as the floppiness of the case and the mistakes and then the harshness and the almost personal tone of the way they came down on USC. And then the fact that now when you look at everything else that's happening, it's so out of line with how they've dealt with the other, you know, more favored conferences or the more favored schools, that the NCAA's got a problem, I mean, a gigantic problem. And USC is part of it. And I think they really have to figure out how to resolve this and make this go away. It will be very interesting to see how this happens.
I agree with you, Dan. Well, let's get to a couple questions here before we let you go. Casey wanted to know, what is the story, the status with Markieff Ambles? And he's a guy that, you know, we know was released from USC. I don't know if you've heard anything recently, but, you know, we don't have him on our scholarship distribution chart. We assume he's going to be transferring somewhere, but we haven't heard exactly what's going on there. I'm not sure if you heard anything recently, Dan.
I have not, and I guess he's really not under any hurry because he's not playing next year. I mean, so it almost doesn't matter. He's got to be in residence a full, you know, two semesters at his new school. So there's no hurry. My guess would be he's being, you know, re-recruited. And one would think that, you know, there are a bunch of places, you know, in the South that would make sense for him. But it doesn't seem like there's any need for him to be, you know, to resolve this Because, for example, let's say he goes somewhere in the spring semester and plays this spring or practices this spring with somebody as a transfer, he's still not going to be able to play next fall. So he would, you know, from the way I understand it, he would still have to go, you know, somewhere this spring if he practiced. He'd still be out next fall and then the next spring. I'm not sure somebody would want necessarily to tie up a scholarship, for example, maybe this quickly. So he might have somewhere, you know, and he could also go to a community college and pick up some, you know, classes and coursework and things like that. But because he can't play next fall, I don't think there's any hurry for, you know, Marquise to, unless he goes to, say, drops down a level and goes to, you know, a school like a Georgia Southern or something like that in, you know, the championship subdivision, you know, then he could be, you know, eligible immediately. I wouldn't guess that's what he's going to do, but I don't think there's any hurry.
Okay. And then one last thing. We do talk a little hoops here on the podcast. We haven't read lately, but USC's off to an 8-5 start on the basketball court, just like USC finished the season with an 8-5 record. So that's kind of interesting. But you know, they had some good games. They beat Tennessee. You know, they came real close to number 3 Kansas. You know, just by stepping on the end line there, they beat Texas. All that said, how do you think, you know, you've been to some of these games? How do you think the men of Troy are going to do when the Pac-10-12 play starts this week? That's from Brandon.
You know, I've contended all along that they had at the absolute worst the second best talent in the Pac-10, and I really hadn't seen Gio, you know, play with the rest of the guys in any games. I think Gio is the real deal. Gio Fontan, the transfer from Fordham, is just one of those kids that calms them down. I think he will get the basketball to places that USC hasn't been able to do in terms of dribble drive penetration, and he will make the big guys better because he, you know, they won't have one of these games where they just set up passing the ball on the perimeter and finally somebody jacks one up from downtown because they can't figure out what the heck else to do. You know, I think they've had offensive limitations in the past. I mean, I still have trouble getting over the fact that those back-to-back 44-point games they at home last year against Oregon and then Oregon State when they got zoned. I mean, it's like, God, how could that possibly ever happen with a team that has the talent USC has? But I do think, you know, this team has some possibilities. You know, obviously they probably should be 11-2, even without Gio. But with Gio, they certainly would have been, 11-2, maybe 12-1. He's really that good. He makes the two big guys better. Alex Stevenson is getting better. He's getting more flexible. I think the yoga is really working with him, and he's a big, strong athlete. And Nikola Vucevic. I mean, I don't know that anybody in the country has a 1-2, ability with two 6'10" kids to play down low. The problem is they weren't, and now they're playing more two-man game where they're forcing you to guard them on the blocks, and they're forcing you to guard them in the lane where they go high-low a little bit, and they're moving and shooting the ball into one another as opposed to just taking up a shot whenever they feel like it. And it's really difficult. I thought it was one of the amazing things was when Kansas realized they couldn't guard the two of them. Kansas has got a couple of big guys, the two Morris brothers, and they physically couldn't handle, Nikola and Alex. And I don't think anybody in the Pac-10 can either. I do think this team will play defense. I do think the fact that you're going to be forced to deal with the two 6'10 guys, because I think Kevin has realized, you know, we have to be able to, you know, run a really consistent, smart, solid offense. I know he's been a defensive-minded coach, but I think offense is going to be the thing that's going to determine, you know, the success of this team. And by the way, they're forcing people to have to defend down low. it really opens up the perimeter. And all of a sudden, we're realizing Donte Smith really can be an excellent spot-up shooter. And Donte, I think, is realizing, I mean, Donte can shoot the ball, but he wasn't consistent, I don't think, in his shot selection. And I don't think they always knew where the shot was going to come for Donte. I think now they do. They're looking for Donte as the zone breaker, and it's going to be harder to play zone against this team because they're forcing you to defend down low. And Gio is a better, you know, the other night he was 4-for-4 on three-point shots. He's a better three-point shooter than I think any of us realized before seeing him in action. So this is a different-looking USC team, and this is a team that, you know, they're very, I think, fortunate the schedule, the way the schedule breaks. They get the two Washingtons who are coming in probably as the top two threats, you know, in the Pac-10. They get them at home this week. And then their first game with UCLA is at USC, their next Pac-10 game. So things are breaking well for this basketball team. I like the makeup a lot. But Gio Fontan, to put him in there with then little Maurice Jones, who really is a talented kid, they've got some serious talent. They don't have a lot of depth. But they're going to make it really difficult, I think, for a lot of teams in the Pac-10. And they're a team that could win on the road, as they showed at Tennessee, as they almost showed at Kansas, that they can go in and play really good people in really difficult arenas, more difficult than any place they're going to play in the Pac-10, and really equip themselves well. So I think it's worthwhile being optimistic about, you know, the basketball team. I think they've got a chance to be playing in, you know, in the tournament in March. They've got a chance, I think, in the Pac-10 tournament at Staples this year as well. So, USC will have something to think about until spring football.
Certainly, yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll see what happens with this week when Pac-10 play starts. Dan, we appreciate all your insights on this low-tech version of the podcast. We'll be back in studios next week, but we're just doing this one on the road. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, always enjoy going back home as a Kentucky guy. Enjoy going back home to Tennessee.
Yeah, all right. It's kind of fun out here, but...
yeah. Okay, see ya.
All right, everyone else, we'll be back in 30 seconds. We're going to talk some more USC football. Stay tuned.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287. 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concerts, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. We're joined in this week, the second segment. Normally he's leading off the show, but we have Coach Harvey Hyde here talking to me from Tennessee. He's up there in Pasadena. How you doing, Coach?
I am doing great. I want to say happy holidays to everyone. I hope everyone had a great, great Christmas or holiday season, and it could be a happy new year for all of us. Today it's exciting here in Pasadena right now because both teams are here. TCU is here down at Marriott, at LA Live. Wisconsin's here. I was down there early yesterday morning and saw everybody coming out. Was talking to people. The teams went to Disneyland yesterday. It's just a great time of the year here in Southern California, especially in the LA area, Pasadena area, with the Rose Bowl, the Tournament of Roses parade, the kickoff luncheon, and the Hall of Fame ceremonies, and all these things that go on. I mean, you could be at something every moment, band fest, equestrian. It's just a great opportunity. If you have a family, or if you're an adult, you've never been to these things, you got to go to them. Because, you know, you can watch the parade on television or watch the game on television. But if you haven't been to it itself, you know, it's something that's one of those things you have to do. A Super Bowl, Kentucky Derby, an Indianapolis 500 race. And if you haven't done it in Southern California or Pasadena, you got to do it. And Ryan, let me just mention this again. You know, they're having the Hall of Fame ceremony Thursday at the Pasadena Convention Center. Brad Buddy from USC, I want everybody to know that. Remember those great teams. He's going into the Rose Bowl Hall of Fame along with Hayden Fry. And also Leroy Keyes from Purdue. So if you want to attend that event, you can. I guess the best way to do it is call the Tournament of Roses at 626-449-4100 and just ask them, how do you get tickets for the Hall of Fame, Rose Bowl Hall of Fame, 12 noon, December 30th at the Pasadena Convention Center. It's going to be a great, great, great event. That's 441-4100. Excuse me for using that period, but I think people should realize what it's all about, what a great event it really is, Brian.
Yeah, if you have never been to the Rose Bowl, it's definitely something to check out. It's a great, it's just great pageantry, and it's just that the granddaddy of them all. I don't know, you know, maybe the bowl games go away at some point, but the Rose Bowl just had such great tradition. And our partner over at sctickets.com, they can get you tickets. Just go to sctickets.com, check them out, and Coach doesn't need tickets for the Rose Bowl from them, but, you know, for anything else. Coach, they just send you Rose Bowl tickets, I know that. But if you need tickets for anything else or you want to go to the Rose Bowl as a fan of just college football, go to sctickets.com.
I'll tell you, it's a great place. They do have tickets. They have tickets for the BCS Championship game, too, if you want to play over the Phoenix and watch that game. That's going to be a great game, too, a team from the Pac-10 versus a team from the Southeastern Conference. I think that's going to be a game that might get over with in about an hour and a half. The way they run, speed their offense up, and Auburn, too, with their big play offense and so on. It's going to be a great game to watch. And, of course, all the other BCS bowl games are going to be great, too. And the Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all, is going to be absolutely fantastic. I'm looking forward to every football game, so don't waste the rest of the football season, because it's almost gone, Brian.
No, it is. And I know USC fans would love to be seeing or getting updates on bowl practices and stuff. But I think this team survived a pretty tough year overall, Coach, and to finish up 8-5 with low numbers on scholarships coming out. I think they're going to come out and be pretty inspired under the second year with Lane Kiffin and his staff. We'll see if there's any shakeup in the staff. But heading into spring ball, I think USC fans, there's a lot of room for optimism there, because it was just a crazy, crazy season. And they had, you know, we talked with Dan Weber in the last segment. He felt that there were like 10 years worth of major headlines in about a 10-month period. And if you look back at having Pete Carroll leave the program, not even be the number one story of the year, I mean, that's pretty crazy. So just all the distractions, all the heartaches and stuff that USC fans and the team had to go through, I think year two under Lane Kiffin is just going to be a kind of a sigh of relief year. And I think you'll get to see these guys come out and play a little bit more inspired football.
I agree. And then this appeal on January 22nd, I think, is going to be huge to the program, because no matter what happens, okay, no matter what happens, hope something good happens, but if nothing happens, or it's over. And I think that's the number one thing. You've got to get all these things behind you so you can focus on the future. You've got to, you know, put everything away and bury it or flush it down the toilet or whatever you need to do with it to get it out of the way. It's the past. And you got to move forward. So after January the 22nd comes National Signing Day, which will be February the 2nd, and that'll be huge and all possible, positive and so on. And then you can move into spring practice, the off season, and everything else that goes along with it, you know?
I agree, Coach. And I think USC fans should be happy with the signing class that's going to come in. I mean, the class that's going to come in on signing day, I think they're going to be pretty impressed with another year of Lane Kiffin putting together a lot of talent. And helping out that roster there. We talked about that a little bit. We got some questions, Coach. Our friend Evan wanted to know, he liked what you said last week about, I think it was last week, that USC really needs to turn Kennard and Nick Perry loose on the quarterback and just kind of wreak havoc in the backfield. He wanted to know, do you think that's going to happen, and do you think they're going to use Kennard maybe at a Sam linebacker in different blitzing schemes, or move him to defensive end? That's kind of been, Coach, what we get a lot of questions about. They kind of want Kennard out of the middle, either outside linebacker or defensive end, and then let Gallippo stay at middle linebacker. What do you think about how that's going to play out?
Well, I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't know what they're thinking. I haven't had a chance to talk to the coaches or anything like that. I'm just looking at it as what I would do. You know, you've got to have pressure coming off the ends. You've got to have pressure. And I would put two great players outside there to force everything back to the inside. You've got to have speed playing out there. So, yeah, I'd put Kennard out there. That's what he came to SC to be, a defensive end. I'd say, Nick, it's time to get back into the mode of getting to hate the quarterback and get in the backfield and play on their side of the ball. And then I'd move Armstead down inside along with the other guys we have. And then all of a sudden you've got some depth, immediate depth, and you'll have still Wes Horton and some of these other guys who can back up the other defensive ends and then find a linebacker combination that can play behind these guys. And if you're dominant in the front side of the ball, the down four guys, and remember I even talked about possibly going to a five defensive front, you know, 5-4, 5-50 defense, then you've got to play more linebackers and more speed on the field. And you've got to be able to have guys that can play fast. You've got to play fast today. You see everybody wearing this, or running this wildcat or some form of it everywhere, the pistol or whatever it is, all these options types of offenses. So you got to play fast. It's no longer a power game. Now there's teams that still play power football. Wisconsin is one. Ohio State's got it mixed in there. I think Michigan would like to see that come back to Michigan, the power football game. There's some teams that can play that because there's teams that are not used to defending power football. But you got to play great defense too, because you've got to be quick enough to stop these teams that you play against. And what the theory of power offense is you keep the ball away from your opponent. That is your defense, your offense. You grind the ball out, and you see what Wisconsin has been able to do with that as far as going 50, 60, 70, 80 points in a game and not trying to run it up. It's just people can't stop them because they're so huge and they're not used to tackling powerful running backs that run hard. They can't even find them behind their huge offensive line. It's a different type of game. You don't see people doing what people used to do. And then they throw the ball well enough to be able to beat you when you start to, you know, put eight or nine guys up in the front to try to slow them down. So, you know, it just depends what you're facing. And I think when you go in the Pac-10 as a defensive coordinator, you look at all of your opponents and you say, who do I have to beat? How can I beat them defensively? And you got to be able to say, this defense and this scheme will face and will defense our conference better than any other defense. You can't sometimes just run what you run until you look about what you got to stop and who you got to play. And then, you know, you got to start with Oregon. Right, you know, Oregon is a team in the Pac-10 that is starting to dominate and get the players and playing a certain style of football that you got to stop. And it's spreading. It's like a disease. Everybody is running the same type of thing. And, of course, you look at what Nevada is running with the pistol. And you look around and you see other people are going to run this. UCLA wants to go to it and make some changes because it's a great equalizer. When you can't stop it, you run option. People can't stop you. You have a great quarterback. You've got an extra guy that's a ball carrier, that's a skilled player in your backfield, and the extra receiver. So as a defensive coordinator, you've got to sort of look at this whole thing and say, hey, what do I have to stop? Maybe I have to change. Maybe I have to change what I'm doing to best fit what other people are doing to be able to beat them. But in the NFL, you don't see this. You don't see this in the NFL. They'd have a lot of problems in the NFL. You're starting to see it more in the NFL. If you watch on Sunday, you're starting to see teams do more of it. And the NFL is having trouble stopping it, but they don't see it. So you've got to be able to run something which will stop what you're seeing offensively in your conference. And, of course, you know what you see non-conference too.
All right, Coach. Makes sense. And thanks for that question, Evan. We also had a couple questions about general questions about redshirting, and I thought maybe we'd get your kind of coach's opinion on this. I talked with Dan Weber in the last segment about this a little bit, a scholarship math article on uscfootball.com, and we put up a distribution chart that kind of shows every position broken down by freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior, where the guys are. And right now, by our count, after the 9 early enrollees, there's 62 guys on scholarship. Currently, there's 14 verbal commitments, and we expect there to be at least a handful more of those, which could, you know, put USC back up above 80 scholarships or so. But looking back, kind of something that Pete Carroll didn't like to do as much. There was more guys redshirted last year. We count 11 redshirt freshmen that'll be on the team next year. So a bunch of guys they've kind of held back. People wanted to know, do you think that the redshirting trend is like that is going to continue just to help out with the lack of depth? They might, you know, redshirts a few more guys just to get kind of down the line when the sanctions kick in, more guys on the roster. Just want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I think, first of all, redshirting is great. If I was a parent sending my kid to college, I would almost ask for a redshirt year. Why? First of all, you get bigger and stronger, and you learn the system. Plus, you get a year ahead, year in of free education where you're going to graduate on time. I think this is the number one thing we used to utilize all the time and almost guaranteed a kid a redshirt year. You know, where that went away is when everybody wanted to leave early and go into the NFL. And when you get these five-star recruits, all of a sudden, you know, they come in with the understanding that, coach, yes, yeah, you're going to encourage me. You're going to play me a lot as a freshman so I can make my points or just demonstrate my skills so that when it's time for me to come out as a junior, I'm ready to be a first-round draft choice. And that hurts you as much as helps you because you lose all these players. And you've got to go back out and get more players. And you take the University of Wisconsin that's coming in. They've got offensive linemen that have all redshirted. They've got guys that have been around. I don't think they have a five-star recruit. Now, you know, they might have one on their whole team or two. I don't know. But they usually can get all three stars, okay? Maybe a four-star here and there and so on. And they keep them around 5 years. And they get big, and they get strong, and they learn the offense, and they become really attached to the Badger football family and tradition and so on. And they play there, and they're understanding they're not coming out early. And they're going to play there their 4 or 5 years of college football. When you go out and get a lot of these five-star players that think they're going to major in the NFL, well, then you're going to lose a lot of these guys. And you're not going to have the tradition, and you're going to be continually rebuilding these type of players. A lot of the players at SC have gone on. A lot of them have done well. Some have not done well by coming out early. A lot of SC's players have transferred. They have not done well when they transferred. They should have stayed at USC and finished their career and so on. You know, sometimes when kids leave, they leave because they don't want to compete or they don't want to play against great players. Well, you've become a great player is when you practice against great players daily. You know, you only get to play 10, 11, 12 games a year, but you practice a lot of times. And if you go against great players every day, then you're going to become a better football player. And if you get a whole year redshirting and maybe getting the crap kicked out of you because you're a redshirt and you're a scout team and you're going against great players, you become a great player. And but you mature and you have a whole year of practicing that normally other players don't get. So I think redshirting is absolutely fantastic. The kids have to be willing to do that when you recruit them, and they have to understand that a college degree is worth something. You certainly do have to have players that on your team that want to major in the NFL, but you need those type of great players on your team to take you to the next level. But I think you've got to have a combination, too. You can't have all players that want to major in the NFL, otherwise you get wiped out. And if they do want to major in the NFL, then what you have to do, too, is to be able to control the redshirting situation. You've got to keep them. Now, I'll just give you an example. I don't think any player that's coming out this year at SC is ready to come out, okay? I think that Smith coming out, fine player, and I said it last week. He's not strong up, in his upper body. He's a great athlete, but he's not ready to block and play in the NFL. I don't think he is. I mean, he's as great a football player as Sam Baker was. And still is. I mean, it was difficult to do that as a freshman and make a team and so on. So if he thinks he's going to be a first-rounder, I don't. And I told you that before on Casey. I think Casey's a great player, but I think he'd be a greater player if he stayed around another year. Why rush things? Why be in a rush? Now, if you're out, you know, if you're like Robert Woods, you know, Robert Woods is going to be, and I can say this, and I don't think I'm a genius in saying this, He's going to be a football phenom. He's going to be like Jackson playing for the Eagles, these guys. You know, then you sit down and you say, you shake his hand and you say, you know, kid, thank you for 3 years. I love you. Go on. We cheer for you. and make sure you put me in my will. Put me in a will or somebody, you know? Because, you know, you can't make that type of money doing anything else. And if the money's out there, you don't want the kid to get hurt. You want him to go on, enjoy it, and so on, and have a great career. So, you know, it depends what type of player you are and what you came to FC for. And I'd like to see players come to get an education. I'd like to see them also come there to be the best at what they do and also not be in a hurry to leave.
I agree, Coach. And, you know, one player I'm very excited about redshirting and maybe one of the most talented redshirts USC's ever had is Kyle Prater coming back. And, you know, Robert Woods obviously stole a lot of the headlines, like you mentioned. But, man, this kid is a special, special talent. And a combination of just kind of injuries and moving out here and stuff, whatever reason, came together that put him on a redshirt track. And I think this USC offense could get a real boost from a guy like Prater coming off a redshirt year.
I agree with you, and you heard me say this last week, and I'll say it again. I'd do away with the tight end offense and make Prater a big receiver. I'd make him an H-back on and off the line of scrimmage, tight slot, and so on, spread the field. I'd move those other big guys. Probably these guys grumble them to want me to say this, but I'd move that big stud right down to tackle. I'd line him up, and he'd be an all-pro tackle in 10 years. I'd say he's a great athlete, was a great basketball player. He's got great feet. Nobody's getting so big and strong and so on, and they don't utilize the tight end in the passing game, that he'd be a better tackle and use some of these skilled receivers like Farmer and the rest of them coming in. And they've got all kinds of great plays. Spread the field and utilize them. And use your speed with some of these other kids that are coming in and create mismatches. Make people try to stop you. Spread the field where if you make the big play, you're going to go for six. And that's one thing SC hasn't had the last couple of years. Not many big plays, explosion plays, where you score in three plays or you get the home run immediately. You got to create those situations where you light up the scoreboard, you know, and then play great aggressive defense.
I agree, Coach. Well, hey, one last thing. It's kind of a general recruiting question about offensive linemen. If you look at our scholarship chart, currently there's two seniors on the offensive line. There are five juniors counting the transfers that are coming in, two sophomores and only one freshman that redshirted. There's four commitments coming in most likely. And see the way the numbers pair out, like you kind of have a lot of offensive linemen in 1 year, not a lot the next year. And then this freshman year, there'll probably be a lot more with the guys coming in there. How do you think that plays out on the offensive line? Do you think USC should get as many? I mean, they're bringing in a couple juniors, but should they get as many freshmen as they can, even though you're going to have like 1 year with a whole bunch of guys and the next year with not as many?
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, linemen are probably the hardest position to recruit. There's a lot of great skill players all over the country, great skill players. You know, it's tough to find a Henderson. This kid that made freshman All-American that FC had signed and went down to Miami. And they say he's a great kid down there, played well and did it all. They're going to move him to left tackle next year. You know, when you get those type of players, man, you can't get too many offensive linemen. You really can't get enough of them, believe me. And you redshirt them, you bring them along, you teach them the offense, they get stronger and bigger and so on. Those great teams that FC has had in the past have all the Munozes and Yeris and Brad Bunnies and these type of guys. Hey, that's what you call, you know, smash mouth. Hey, you know, my O is bigger than your X, or whatever you want to say. It just isn't going to happen. You're not going to beat me. And I think that's what you have to do with the offensive line. They've got to mature. They've got to get stronger. You've got to keep them around a long time. You've got to own the line of scrimmage. You got to be able to come off the line of scrimmage. I think a lot of this zone blocking is overrated. I like to see it come off the line and play on their side of the field. Play on their side of the field, but these guys aren't used to linemen firing out. They're used to facing all these zone type of teams and so on. Stanford is that type of team, and look at the success that Harbaugh and Stanford has had with their linemen coming off the field. They don't zone block around a lot. They want to double team, pull block down, pull their offside guard. They want your secondary to start tackling our running backs, and all of a sudden your secondary doesn't want to tackle their running backs because they're beat up and they're sore and they don't want to do that anymore. So, you know, I think you've got to have offensive linemen, and you never turn down an offensive lineman. And a lot of these kids coming in, these junior college players and so on, you know, it's next level. It's a different level from junior college to come into play at SC. It's a step up that people don't realize the difference in talent. Now, there's always great players out there that can come in and play. I think basically these players are coming in and they'll be depth guys on the depth chart for a while until one of them, you know, surface and become a great player. And I hope they are great players because you bring in these players. I used to tell my team when I went recruiting, I used to tell them, I'd call them all in as our final meeting of the year before we were recruiting. I'd call them all in and said, guys, I'm going out recruiting and my job is to come back and make all of you second string. All you starters are going to be second string next year. And I'd say, if you guys are second string, you know whose fault it is? It's your fault. But you're just sitting around doing nothing, and I'm going big game hunting. I'm going out there, and I'm going to find me the best players in America that I can bring in here. And if they're better, that means we're better. So the only way you can get better, you better work harder. And I'd simply do that. I would go out there thinking every single year, no matter what who I had played at any positions, I don't even care if it was Randall Cunningham or Icky Woods, I'll go find somebody better than them. And that's exactly what I did, and my players knew that. So it motivated them. I believe talent is the name of the game. When coaches think they're going to out-coach people, hey, man, all coaches are good coaches. Don't get carried away with your coaching ability. You better get carried away with the type of players you're recruiting and who's representing you and what type of kids they are. And are they winners? And will they, you know, chop their hand off for you? Or will they play hurt? Or will they be loyal to the program? I mean, you got to have guys that, you know, this is a gladiator game, buddy. This is a gladiator game. You know, you go in there, you only got 12 hours a year for all the off season and everything you do. And you got to get yourself where you're used to turf toes, you're used to burning your elbows on turf. You're used to a lot of things because you don't have a chance to do this very often. And I think recruiting, this coaching, you know, is great. But I think recruiting is even better.
Well, it's recruiting season, Coach, and that's USC fans love to hear that. Leading up to signing day, we'll be talking a lot more recruiting on the podcast on USAFootball.com. And we appreciate you coming in, Coach, joining me in Tennessee. You're usually the one on remote somewhere. I'm usually home in the studio, but I'm in here in Tennessee. It's snow on the ground. Should be fun, and I'll be back. And we'll be able to talk to you again next year. It'll be great.
Hey, listen, when you're down there, get over to the Country Western Hall of Fame. Have you been over there?
No, I think we're going to try and do that this week. That'll be fun.
Get over there and look for my father-in-law. He's in there, Cliffy Stone. I don't know how many people out there remember the name Cliffy Stone. Used to have Hometown Jamboree there in El Monte, and also he managed Tennessee Ernie Ford. This is way before your time. You know, you're probably not even born when this was going on KTLA and all.
I'm 40 now, Coach. I'm old. I'm 40 years old. I turned 40 last week.
Holy cow. You can get your Social Security check soon, but I'm telling you, 40, man, I tell you, you're a kid, okay? You're a kid. You got so much life in front of you and so on. Your best years are yet to come, Ryan.
Well, I appreciate that, Coach, and I'm sure yours are as well. But even though you've had a great life so far, I mean, I don't know how it could get much better for you, but I'm sure it will. And we're 150 episodes old this week, Coach. This is episode 150.
We've done 150 of these.
Yeah, crazy, huh?
Wow. Man, I tell you what, it goes fast when you're having fun, doesn't it?
It definitely does. Yeah, 2 years strong, going on 3 years. It'll be great.
Good. Listen, I want to wish you and your family and all of our listeners out there a very happy new year. And try to take in a lot of those Tournament of Roses events, especially the Hall of Fame. Bad Buddies going in. Call the tournament 626-449-4100. Find out how you can get tickets to that. That's Thursday. This coming Thursday, December 30th at 12 noon at the Pasadena Convention Center. And Ryan, I don't know when you're coming back, but please travel back safely, and I'll look forward to being with you next week.
Sounds good, Coach. I repeat that sentiment to everyone. Happy New Year. Hope you had a great holiday. We appreciate you listening to the Peristyle Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
You You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.